Welcome to 2 and 2 Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Lavernier, bringing you an hour of comedy. Later on, we'll hear the Judy Canova Show from the war years, but right now it's the Fred Allen Program with special guest, actor, and occasional comedian Orson Welles. This episode from March 3rd, 1946 on NBC.
I can't think of anything tonight, kiddies.
The makers of Bluebonnet Margarine and Tenderleaf Tea present the Fred Allen Show with Fred's guest, Orson Welles. Portland Hopper, Minerva Pyers as Mrs. Nussbaum, Alan Reed as Falstaff Openshaw, Parker Fenley as Titus Moody, the DeMarco sisters, and Al Goodman and his orchestra. And until I show up as Senator Claghorn, my name is Kenny Delmar. This week, ladies and gentlemen, a new book, The Way to Vocabulary, Power, and Culture, was published. We bring you now the new literary lion whose name appears twice in this work. He's Fred Allen.
Thank you. I'm laughing already at last week's show. Now, thank you. Thank you, and good evening. And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And Kenny, I'm really happy that you mentioned Dr. Funk's new tome, The Way to Vocabulary, Power, and Culture. You know, I am now a part-time intellectual. If you ever pass Brentano's, look up. I may be in the window.
Well, have you noticed any difference since your name was mentioned in Dr. Funk's book?
Well, yes, Kenny. I'm the talk of the literary set in subdued voices for the nonce. On Fifth Avenue yesterday, Elsa Maxwell blew me a kiss.
Elsa blew you a kiss?
Yes, she was a little short-winded. It fell in the gutter, but I went over and rescued it. You know, you should expand your vocabulary, Kenny. Get hep to words like tessellated.
Tessellated, what does it mean?
Well, thanks to Dr. Funk, I am now in a position to tell you, Kenny. Tessellated means adorned with mosaics.
Oh, what does mosaics mean?
Kenny, don't press your luck. I'm only up to page 12 myself. When I get up to the mosaics, you'll hear from me by phone. Don't let me go on.
Mr. Allen!
Let me stand there reading punctuation for a minute. What is new? What's new, Portland?
Mama said your name is in Dr. Funk's new vocabulary book.
That is correct. And I would like to add at this time that Mr. Jack Benny's name does not appear in the book.
Hasn't Jack
Two people from Waukegan, huh? Well, the weather's breaking. Hitchhikers are out again.
Jack, a large vocabulary.
Two words he uses on his program. Yipe and hmm. You know, Benny takes spelling lessons from Red Skelton.
I think Jack is pretty smart.
Smart?
He's always teaching Phil Harris new words.
Phil Harris? Phil Harris is the moron's messiah. And he is still smarter than Mr. Benny. You know, when Benny finished grammar school, he was so old, instead of a diploma, they gave him a pension.
Mama said you were the only kid in kindergarten with 5 o'clock shadow.
Well, look, when Benny went to school, he had to have a tutor to get through recess. The longest word Mr. Benny knows, you can get out of an oboe player's mouth sideways. Big words. Have you ever heard the word tessellated?
Yes. Tessellated means to be adorned with mosaics.
Who asked you what it meant?
Do you want to know what mosaic means?
Never mind, never mind. You're reading the book from the back. I can see that. You women are making too much trouble today, Portland. I read that women want equal rights in the world under the UNO.
Mama says behind every successful man, there's a woman.
Oh, poppycock. Who discovered America? A man, Columbus.
Columbus borrowed the money to make the trip from a woman, Queen Isabella.
Who was the first mayor? Well, she's been dead a long time. Nobody knows the word. Who was the first mayor to have his own radio program? A man, Mayor LaGuardia.
How did he reach the microphone?
How?
His wife put him up to it.
Well, touche, and I don't mean that hand lotion, Portland. And speaking of hand lotions, we have a date with a couple of chaps in Allen's Alley.
What is your question tonight?
Well, wait till the Page boys laugh. Let the boys... My question this week, the department... I'll be glad when we're working on the street again. People going by laughing. All indoors. It's confusing. Well, this past week, my question, Portland, the Department of Agriculture, concerned about the chicken surplus, called a conference to get housewives to buy more poultry. And so our question this evening is, have you heard about the chicken surplus? And if you have, are you eating more chicken to help reduce it?
Shall we go?
As the saw in the sawmill said to the knot hole, I think I'll buzz along. Good to get back to Allen's Alley, Portland. Well, I guess the senator's just finished dinner. There's a big catfish head on the lawn. See the flies? Well, let's knock.
Somebody, somebody knock.
Yes, I...
Claghorn's the name. Senator Claghorn, that is.
You're from the South.
When I play bridge, I'm never sitting off.
Now, wait a minute.
The man who knows Senator's best, it's Claghorn 6 7/8 to 3.
Now, look, Senator.
I shot a robin this morning.
You shot a robin?
I caught the little feathered traitor flying back from the South.
Oh. Well, tell me, Senator, what is the reaction to this poultry surplus down there in Washington?
Every time I mention chickens, Senator Hatch eggs me on.
Oh, ah! Yeah.
Hatch eggs, that's a jest, son.
I...
Hey, own up, son, you're just a dumb dodo. You're extinct, that is.
Now, wait a minute. Let me get in here. Tell me, Senator, are you doing anything about this chicken surplus?
I'm eating chicken every day.
Good.
I have my own recipe, chicken a la Claghorn.
Chicken a la Claghorn. How do you prepare your fowl, Senator?
First, I soak my chicken overnight in Kentucky bourbon.
Uh-huh.
Hard for me to go on here now. Then I boil it in Louisiana corn.
Yes.
Then I baste it with Mississippi mint julep.
Yes.
Then I leave it in the skillet over a slow fire for 2 days.
And the chicken's ready?
I don't bother with the chicken.
No?
When I get through lapping up that gravy...
Yes?
I'm southern fried. Son, son,
well, the senator certainly knows his culinary stuff. Well, let's see if Mr. Moody is here.
Howdy, Bob.
You look a little tired, Mr. Moody.
Yeah, I had set up all night in the pig pen.
Oh, really?
One of my pigs had ptomaine.
Oh. Well, how could a pig get ptomaine?
I don't know. Must have ate a piece of tainted swill or something.
Oh, there's something wrong?
Yeah, I got the rheumatism, both arms. Just got a crick.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, doesn't the rheumatism bother you working?
Just milking. I can't move my arms.
Well, how do you milk?
Well, first I sit on the stool.
Yes?
I get a good grip.
I see.
And then I just hold on.
And?
The cow jumps up and down.
Well, tell me, Mr. Moody, what about this chicken surplus?
Oh, there's only one way to stop a chicken surplus. Nip it in the nest.
Nip it in the nest? You mean...
Stop the hens from setting, from having more chickens.
Well, how?
Do what I done last week.
What?
Well, I put a dozen Chinese eggs in one nest.
China eggs? And what happened?
That hen hatched out the prettiest set of demi-tassie cups I ever seen. So long, man.
Well, I've never heard of a hen and her cups before. Oh, well, let's try this next door.
No.
Not Mrs. Nussbaum.
You are expecting maybe Ronald Goldman.
Tell me, Mrs. Nussbaum, are you doing your bit to help reduce the chicken surplus?
I'm sending to Washington a slogan.
Oh, what is your slogan?
The war is over. We're through with bullets. Now is the time. Start cooking pullets.
Very good. Excellent. Are you, beside the slogan, are you using poultry at home?
For every meal in my house, I'm serving chicken.
No kidding.
For breakfast, I'm making Wheaties.
Uh-huh.
Concealed in the Wheaties is chicken gizzards.
Chicken gizzards. You have coffee, too?
Oh, instead of coffee, I'm serving piping hot a cup of chicken fat.
Oh, yum, yum.
For lunch, I'm cooking chicken Chinese style.
Chinese chicken?
This is egg foo young.
Uh-huh.
Instead of the foo, I'm putting in chicken giblets.
Oh, instead of the foo. Well, that should improve the taste. And you serve it Chinese style with chopsticks?
No, with drumsticks.
Oh, with drumsticks. What is for dinner?
Roast chicken stuffed.
Stuffed, huh?
Inside the roast chicken is a boiled chicken.
Oh.
After dinner is coming chicken coffee.
Well, what is chicken coffee?
Instead of sugar,
uh-huh,
in the coffee I'm dropping 2 lumps of white meat.
Well, chicken 3 times a day, isn't your husband complaining?
Complaining? Pierre is wanting even more chicken.
Well, how do you know?
Yesterday, I'm catching him with 2 blondes. Oh. Thank you.
Well, here we are at the end of Allen's Alley. What can happen at this last shanty?
Hi-ho all, it isn't Rudy Valley, it's the poet laureate of Allen's Alley.
You have new poems for us tonight?
Oh, indubitably. Have you heard that Mayor O'Dwyer to Mr. Quill, surprise, the subways are running still?
No.
Or, life said the worm didn't give me a break. If I was 3 feet longer, I'd be a snake.
No.
Mother's spirits are low, they've almost hit bottom. She knows Gable is back and Gotham has got it.
No! This is the straw that sent the camel to the osteopath. Tonight we are discussing the chicken surplus.
I know. I have prepared a poem.
And what is your chicken surplus quatrain called?
In Rebuttal.
In Rebuttal. How does it go?
The rooster flew to the henhouse roof and crowed to the world at large, his message conceived in rebuttal to the chicken surplus charge. We give up our lives, crowed the rooster, and I speak for each chicken and hen who has died and been fried through the ages to grace the tables of men. Today you proclaim there's a surplus, yet to death you continue to doom us. Your cold storage warehouses glutted with fowl and none to consume us. The real reason there's a surplus of poultry is the population has shrunk in New York. So don't go around blaming us chickens. Go take it up with the stork.
Thank you, Falstaff. And now from the foul folder roll of Falstaff, we turn with pleasure to the Chicory Chick Choir, the 5 DeMarco sisters, accompanied by Maestro Al Goodman and his surplus symphonist. The DeMarco sing Atlanta, GA.
I love to walk among the flowers and taste the honey from the bee. I want to while away my hours reading books and dreaming dreams beneath the trees. I want to see the ivy clinging, hear the robin singing little songs I adore. I want to attend the Sunday meeting, hear the friendly greeting when I get home once more. I long to have that certain someone I miss him every day. I'm getting ready for when gonna get the train to set for Atlanta, GA. I wanna see the ivy clinging, wanna hear the robin singing, wanna attend the Sunday meeting, wanna hear the friendly greeting when I get home once more.
I long to hold that certain someone I miss him every day.
I'm getting ready for when I'm gonna get the train that's setting and for Atlanta, GA. Atlanta, GA.
That was a miniature version of Personality played by Al Goodman and his Union Squares. Say, Portland.
Yes?
You know, we have to get busy. Our guest tonight is Orson Welles. Is the gold mesh carpet ready?
The gold carpet is ready?
Yeah.
The man from Tiffany's brought the jade microphone.
The jade microphone? I told him the turquoise microphone. Get the preparation we have to make for Orson.
Did you rehearse the Orson Welles fanfare?
Oh, gosh, I forgot. Mr. Goodman, with that special Orson Welles fanfare, have your men chew on a little sensen before they blow their trumpets. Mr. Welles likes to smell something as he comes on. In fact, I would... Hey, this must be Orson now. Mr. Goodman, the fanfare, please. Stop it, please. You're not Orson Welles.
No, I'm Mr. Welles' personal psychiatrist.
Yes?
I'm afraid Mr. Welles cannot appear on your program tonight.
Can't appear?
No, Mr. Welles is suffering from a complete breakdown of personality.
But, doctor, you are a doctor.
In some states, yes.
Doctor, you mean the great Orson Welles, the brash, impetuous exhibitionist?
Today, he is a cringing, beaten milquetoast.
Oh, what happened?
It was that role he played in his new picture, Tomorrow is Forever.
Yes?
He appeared as Eric Kessler, a frustrated elderly Dutchman.
Yes?
It took 8 months to make the picture. For 8 months, Mr. Welles lived as Eric Kessler.
Uh-huh.
He still thinks he's Kessler.
Eric Kessler.
He has Kessler's Dutch dialect. He has Kessler's inferiority complex.
Orson Welles with an inferiority complex? I can't believe it, Doctor.
Oh, you must help him, Mr. Allen. I have Mr. Welles in a rest home on 52nd Street.
Uh-huh. But... Doctors Leon and Eddie's the place I've seen. What can I...
If you can induce Mr. Welles to face an audience again, he might conquer his phobia.
I shall do it. Let's go to the rest home, Doctor. Let's go.
This is Mr. Welles' room.
But there's no one in here, Doctor.
Shh, quiet. Mr. Welles is hiding in the closet again. Be careful, Mr. Allen. If you upset him, this Kessler complex returns. He starts talking Dutch. Good luck, Mr. Allen.
Thank you, Doctor. Gad, a pitiful case. Orson Welles hiding in a closet. Orson! Orson! Come out of the closet, Orson! Nobody'll hurt you. Come out, Orson! Ah, the door is opening.
Yes, please?
Orson Welles! Orson, you remember me, Fred Allen.
Was you ever in Cincinnati?
Look, Orson.
Excuse, please. The name is Eric. Eric Kessler.
But, Orson, I'm your old friend.
Was you ever in Cincinnati?
Orson, you must snap out of it.
Oh, everything is so confused.
Think hard. Back in the dim, hazy past, you knew a man named Orson Welles.
Orson Welles.
Think.
Orson Welles. I seem to recall. Orson Welles used to walk down Fifth Avenue with a marmoset riding his arm side saddle.
Uh-huh.
A fawn prancing by his side and 20 giant butterflies on silken leashes flew ahead, spelling out the name Orson.
I saw Orson Welles one day carrying a cane. It was the hind leg of a gazelle.
Orson used to strut into the automat, stand in front of those little windows and say, open. Every single window would fly open.
Well, listen, Mr. Kessler, that man with the 20 butterflies and the hind leg of the gazelle was you. You were Orson Welles. You're still Orson Welles, star of stage, screen, and radio.
Fred.
Yes?
You left out television.
Ah! That's the old Orson, the old blowhard coming back.
You mean I'm not Kessler, the weakling? I am Orson Welles, the blowhard?
Yes. You have got to convince yourself. Say to yourself, I am Orson Welles.
I am Orson Welles.
Good, good. Say it again. I am the great Orson Welles.
I am the great Orson Welles.
Let it ring
out. I am the great Orson Welles.
You're cured. The old power, the old ego. The old ham is back. Now you know who you are.
I am Eric Kessler.
Orson.
Was you ever in Cincinnati?
Orson, you're slipping. Orson.
Oh, it's no use, Fred. It's nice of you to try and help, but now if you'll excuse me, I'll go back into my little old closet.
Now, Orson, we can conquer this complex. If you'd give one performance in public, your past would return. A long time ago, we did a play together, remember?
Oh, yes, it was Les Miserables.
Let's do it again.
Oh, Fred, I'm frightened.
Buck up, Orson.
All right, if you insist, I'll do the play on one condition.
Yes, Orson.
You must be the star. You must do all the acting.
All the acting.
Just let me appear for a second, no more.
Good.
Yes.
If you only speak one line, it will bolster your courage. Now, as we start, you can announce the play.
Fred, it means mentioning my own name. I'm afraid.
Steel yourself. You must conquer this inferiority complex. You can do it, Orson. Music, Mr. Goodman.
Les Miserables. Is that all right? Can I go ahead?
All right, go ahead, Orson.
Victor Hugo's immortal story of a soul transfigured and redeemed through suffering. This is an Orson Welles production.
Radio version of Les Miserables prepared by...
Orson Welles.
Directed by...
Orson Welles.
Starring...
Orson Welles. Orson Welles will be assisted...
Wait, now hold it, now hold it. Wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute.
Fred, did you hear I said my name? I said my name.
And you said it plenty, too. What about my name?
Well, I announced you, Fred. The music cut in too quickly.
Now watch that music, Mr. Goodman. Orson, you said you wanted me to be the star of the play. Now, if you're going to take all the credit... Orson. Orson.
Was you ever in Cincinnati?
Dad, he's slipping again.
I am Eric Kessler.
No, no, you are Orson Welles.
That's right, I am, I am. I'm Orson Welles.
Well, what happened?
You raised your voice to me, Fred. Remember my condition.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, let's start the play.
The play? The play? What play?
Les Miserables, you remember?
Yes, yes. I am Jean Valjean, the hunted convict.
Yes.
You are Javert, the detective, that merciless minion of the law, always on my trail.
Yes.
You do all the acting.
All the acting.
Yes.
I'm the star.
Yes.
You just come on for a second.
That's right.
Fine, let's go.
The first scene is a dingy garret in the slums of Paris. As the story opens, I, Jean Valjean... I'm hiding out. I think I have escaped you.
Uh-huh.
As we first see Jean Valjean, he is soliloquizing.
At last, Jean Valjean, you are safe. There is no cause to fear this Javert who has hounded you so long. Javert, your nemesis, that merciless bloodhound, always in pursuit of you, is finally thrown off the track, completely baffled. But hark, that sound upon the stairs, footsteps. Those same plodding footsteps. Uh-huh. Javert, what is to be done? Ah, this window. Jean Valjean will never be taken. Goodbye, Javert!
Now, wait a minute, wait a minute. Hey, wait a minute. Stop the music, Mr. Goodman.
Fred, did you hear that? That was I, the old Orson Welles. I'm not afraid anymore.
No, now I'm starting to get a little frightened. Now, look, Orson.
Later, Fred. Now we start the second scene.
Never mind the second scene. What about the first scene?
Oh, it was wonderful, Fred. I'm getting that old feeling again.
And I'm getting that old business again. Orson, you said I was going to be the star.
But you are the star, Fred. What stole that whole scene?
What?
It was that knock on the door. And who knocked on that door? Javert.
Never mind Javert.
Well, you motivate the entire story. If you hadn't knocked at that door, I'd still be in the garret. We'd have no play.
Now, don't give me that. I'm supposed to do all the acting. I haven't even had one line.
Was you ever in Cincinnati?
Take it easy, Orson.
Well, watch that, Fred.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I will. Well, what happens now?
Well, in the second scene, you dominate the whole thing. I am just a stooge.
A stooge. Well, that's more like it. What is the second scene?
Well, it's years later. This time, you, Javert, have me trapped. Cosette Fabantou, a demi-monde, is concealing me in the back room of a bistro. I, Jean Valjean, am pacing up and down.
Jean, will you stop pacing toujours up and down?
This is the end, Cosette, my farewell to freedom.
instead of liberty, waits the galley crew, the iron collar, the chain at my foot, the dungeon, the plank bed, all the horrors I know so well. To submit morning and evening to the hammer of the roundsman who tests the fetters. Time is short. The net is tightening. Javert.
Quick, Jean Valjean. Through the trap door.
Merci, Cosette. Jean Valjean will never be taken again. Au revoir, Javert.
Now hold it. Hold it. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Stop the music. Now look. Now look, Austin.
You were magnificent.
Never mind that.
You stole that scene right out from under my nose.
Now look, let me tell you.
Yeah, that suspense, man.
Austin, please.
I've seen Javert played 100 times. The Theater Guild, Moscow Art Theater, at Grossinger's. Van Johnson has played Javert. But I've never heard a Javert get the tone out of that police whistle that you got tonight.
Now, look, Austin, I don't mind playing the schnook to help restore your ego. But now my ego is going. In two acts, all I've done is knock on a door and blow a whistle.
Were you ever...
All right, all right, all right, all right. The next... go ahead with the play.
The next scene is all yours, Fred. As you started to say, you trail me through the sewers of Paris.
Uh-huh.
You finally corner me single-handed. And there we stand, face to face. I just have a few words, and then you speak.
I finally speak. Well, it's about time. Let's go.
Mon Dieu, hell situation. Alone in this sewer. Wrapped like a rat. The gloomy darkness. This narrow archway above my head. These two slimy corridor walls. But hark, that's sloshing through the muck. Last, you cornered me, Javert. Don't talk, Javert. Before you seal my doom, I would speak for the last time. You will never take Jean Valjean alive, Javert. The water in this sewer is rising. I am 6'9". You, Javert, are 4'2". The water rises. No, no, not yet, Javert. Don't speak. The water, higher, higher, higher. Now, Javert, you have Jean Valjean at your mercy. Pronounce my doom. Now, Javert, speak. Speak!
And now, Kenny Delmar. His subject, the American woman.
Everybody knows that American women are the most beautiful in the world. The best dressed and most charming, and the best managers, too. Yes, Mrs. America is practical. That's why she buys more Tenderleaf tea balls than any other kind. They are so practical in daily use, better in every way. They give you richer, more flavorful tea because they're made with Tenderleaf brand tea, famous for its flavor. That finer blend of choice tea leaves is put up in crisp, white, individual packets. Little envelopes made of tasteless filter paper. They're appealing to see, dainty, convenient to handle, and absolutely insoluble in the hottest water. Your tea is filtered crystal clear as it's being made. And it's made in a hurry. When you want a cup of quick comfort, just pop a Tenderleaf tea ball into a cup, add boiling water, and there you are. So be practical for every good reason. Ask your grocer for Tenderleaf brand tea ball.
Now, before we pack away the Tenderleaf tea and Blue Bonnet margarine for tonight, here's a final word from Fred Allen.
Was you ever in Cincinnati?
Thank you, Eric Kessler. Next week, Eric Kessler's guest will be Carmen Miranda.
Good night, all this.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The Fred Allen Show, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 3rd of March, 1946 on NBC. Special guest Orson Welles, known for being a maverick in many ways and a pioneer of radio and the movies. In the same year of that broadcast, he was heard in radio episodes of The Danny Kaye Show, The Radio Reader's Digest, The Orson Welles Program, even as special guest on the Bill Stern Colgate Sports Newsreel. You're listening to an hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now on to the Judy Canova program from March 4th, 1944. As a reminder, this was in the thick of World War II, and you'll hear references to that. It's the Judy Canova Show from CBS. We'll be right back.
for a breath that's sweet and a smile that dazzles. It's Colgate Tooth Powder. And for a riot of fun, it's America's wacky, wistful, wonderful, scatterbrained Judy Canova.
Howdy, folks, howdy. Well, sir, are you all happy, or have you been trying to figure out your income tax blank, too? I was down to the income tax office this afternoon. All the celebrities was down there. Dorothy L'Amour put down her sarong as a dependent. Yes, sir. Now, don't laugh. You'd be surprised how much she depends on that sarong. You know, a clerk, while I was there, a clerk handed Hedy Lamarr a tax blank. Imagine the government asking Hedy Lamarr to fill out her form. Now, it's a good thing the little babies don't have to file a return. How could they tell you what they wanted taken off? They say that you're allowed $1,200 for a wife. Well, no wonder here in Hollywood they keep trading them in every year. Did you ever read your income tax form real close like, though? Now, look, I'll just read you a little sample right here. It says, income received from other sources, no other sources, consistent of salaries, wages, fees, commissions, bonuses, and other compensation for personal services. Total of column 3, page 4, enter as item 3, page 6, detour to page 7. And folks, when you get on page 7, it says, so you won't give up, eh? But after all, it all boils down to three main questions. How much did you make? How much have you got left? And how come? But you know something, really, though, we ought not to kick about how high our taxes get. We should all say what Admiral Nimitz says when he sees a Jap island. We can take it.
And here is Judy with a musical stump speech for a gal named Sweet Georgia Brown. Charles Dant and the boys will stuff the ballot box.
No gal made has got a shade on Sweet Georgia Brown. Two left feet, but also neat has Sweet Georgia Brown. They all sigh and want to die for Sweet Georgia Brown. I'll tell you just why. You know I don't lie, no, not much. Now it's been said, she knocks them dead when she lands in town. Since she came, well, it's a shame how she cools them down. Fellas, she can't get all those fellas that she ain't met. Georgia claimed her, Georgia named her Sweet Georgia Brown. No gal mate has got a shade on Sweet Georgia Brown. Two left feet, but also neat has Sweet Georgia Brown. They all sigh and want to die for Sweet Georgia Brown. I'll tell you just why. You know I don't all the tips the porter slips to Sweet Georgia Brown. They buy clothes at fashion shows with $1 down. Oh boy, tip your hat. Oh joy, she's the cat. Who's that mister? Tell me your sister.
Oh, hello, Judy. Say, is it true that you're going to build a house for yourself with all that old lumber lying around?
I sure am, Mr. Knopf. It's going to be an office in my house, too. I got everything all fixed.
Uh-huh. Well, what are your dimensions?
Bust 36, waist 28, hips.
No,
I ain't
going to
tell you what the... No, I ain't going to tell you
what...
Well,
wait a minute, Judy. I'm talking about the plans of the house.
Oh, the plans of the house. Oh, here they are. They was drawn up by the California Draftsman Institute.
Uh-huh. Well, they sure have a catchy slogan here. It says, "Let us draw your blueprints, and you won't get caught with your plans down." Well, these look all right. What kind of lumber are you going to use, Judy?
Well, I'm going to use California redwood. You know what redwood is? That cedar that blushes when it rains in California. Sure got tired of blushing the past 2 weeks. Say, Mr. Niles, Pedro Sylvester and Eddie Dean are working now. Let's go out and see how they're getting along.
Okay. Gee, look at them there, Judy. They're working like mad.
Yeah. Hiya, fellas.
Hello, Senorita.
Hello, Miss Judy.
Hiya, Niles.
Hey, what's the matter, Pedro? You aren't working. What are you doing with that big bucket?
Well, pardon me for talking in your face, Senorita. I'm selling lemonade to the children that are watching us work.
Well, here. Let me taste that. Pedro, that is not lemonade. That's carrot juice. Why, nobody would drink that but rabbits.
Oh, Senorita, I thought those little kids had awfully long ears.
Well, enough of that now, Pedro. You get to work, and right now.
Okie dokie, Senorita. I put the walls up pronto.
Put the walls up? Well, what about a foundation?
Oh, no thanks, Senorita. I do not wear one.
Pedro, you know, sometimes when I look at you, I'd swear you were born on April Fool's Day.
No, I wasn't. It wasn't New Year's Eve either.
How do you know it wasn't New Year's Eve?
Oh, Senorita, I wouldn't be silly enough to stay home on New Year's Eve.
Well, you get right to work. Now let's get this place started.
Hasty luego.
Hasty lumbago to you too, Pedro.
Say, hello, honey. Look what I'm doing. I'm the water boy for the gentleman.
Oh, hello, Geranium. Well, you can give me a drink, too.
All right, here he is, honey.
Geranium, this isn't water. This is pure alcohol.
My, my, no wonder I've been so thirsty.
Well, I'm sure glad to see you anyway. You know, I was worried how you'd get home last night.
Oh, the man I was with brought me home in a rowboat.
Now, Geranium, that's going too far. You know it's never wet in California.
Well, I don't know, honey, but when he turned the corner and I fell out, that stuff I was swimming in wasn't orange juice.
Oh, by the way, did you get that letter I left in the kitchen for you?
Oh, I sure did, honey. You know it was from my boyfriend, Pomeroy.
Oh, is he still in Italy?
No, he went on a bombing mission over Africa. And something happened and he had to bail out. He said that he landed in the desert and his throat was parched with thirst and there was nothing to drink but water. Yeah, but he said a queen of the Ubangi tribe found him and let him sit in the shade of a lower lip.
Oh, gee, he's lucky she found him, huh?
Lucky? Why, he says he's now the husband of the queen of the saucer lip tribe and father of a 42-piece dinner set. Oh, shucks, what am I laughing at?
Well, don't worry, Geranium. Our boys will soon be marching into B-E-R-I-N.
B-E-R-I-N? Honey, that ain't the way to spell Berlin.
Yes, it is. Our American flyers have bombed the L out of it.
Oh.
Hey, Judy, I've just discovered something. Did you know there was an echo that comes from across the lake?
There is?
Yeah, just listen to this. Hello!
Hello!
How are you?
How are you?
Gee, let me try it. Vaudeville!
Vaudeville!
Gosh, even vaudeville's coming back.
Hey, Judy, listen to this.
Colgate tooth powder.
Would you repeat that, Bud?
Why, certainly. Colgate tooth powder gives you a breath that's sweet and a smile that dazzles.
Shucks, everybody echoes that statement, and you don't have to yell at people to make them understand, because if you brush your teeth night and morning and before every date with Colgate tooth powder, I'll promise you a breath that's sweet and a smile that dazzles.
That's right. Colgate tooth powder removes dull surface film and reveals the natural sparkle of your teeth. That's Colgate tooth powder.
I love you. Oh, shucks. I'm sorry, Mr. Niles, but I'm so used to saying that back to lovers, I forget myself.
Oh, that's all right, Echo, old boy. The three most beautiful words in the English language are I love you, and we like to know that Colgate tooth powder gives those words a grand send-off. You know, without oral unpleasing breath. Yes, Colgate tooth powder not only brightens your smile, but scientific tests have definitely proved that in 7 cases out of 10, it stops oral unpleasing breath instantly. So whether you want to be on the giving or the receiving end of those three little words, I love you, be sure to brush your teeth night and morning and before every date with Colgate tooth powder. And I'll promise you a breath that's sweet and a smile that dazzles. Remember the name, Colgate tooth powder.
Colgate tooth powder.
And here's Eddie Dean, our cowboy baritone, with his version of There's a Star-Spangled Banner Waving Somewhere.
There's a star-spangled banner waving somewhere in a distant land so many miles away. Only Uncle Sam's great heroes get to go there, where I wish that I could also live someday. I'd see Lincoln, Custer, Washington, and Perry, Nathan Hale, and Cole, and Kelly, too. There's a star-spangled banner waving somewhere, waving o'er a land of heroes brave and true. In this war with its mad schemes of destruction, of our country fair and our sweet liberty, by the mad dictators, leaders of corruption, can't the U.S. use an old cowboy like me? God gave me the right to be a free American, and for that precious right I'd gladly die. There's a star-spangled banner waving somewhere, that is where I want to live when I die.
Boys are coming with my new house.
Greetings and salutations. And all that sort of stuff, Miss Judy. Say, you know, I'm so happy to saw boards and hammer nails and build this scrumptious edifice for you.
Sylvester, you better work and stop talking or we'll have another flood before we get the house up.
Oh, Shuffrin' Zuckerson! You'll be sorry. I just want you to know that if I do a good job here, Hedy Lamarr wants me to build her a house. Yes, sir. There won't be any fireplaces, no furnaces, and no electric heaters of any description.
You mean to tell me you're going to build Hedy Lamarr a bungalow without any heaters? Why?
She's so young.
Say, Pedro, you're building the house sideways. How could you do such a thing?
Well, Senorita, I was lying down when I read the blueprints.
Oh, don't be so ridiculous. Why, I don't think you can even saw a board.
Oh, do not say that, Senorita. I am a Cracker Jack carpenter.
A Cracker Jack carpenter?
Si.
What'd you ever make?
Cracker Jacks.
Say, Judy, this house is really a mess. Look, they built the furnace in the clothes closet.
Why, so they have.
Well, won't the clothes burn?
No, not as well as logs. And you know, Mr. Niles, when the house is all finished, I'll call an electrician and have him wire plenty of lights and make it a real modern house.
Oh, pardon me for talking in your face, Senorita, but I could do the lighting for you.
No, thanks, Pedro. You fixed us good when we took over this motel. You know, I didn't mind it when I turned on the vacuum and got Frank Sinatra. I didn't mind it when the percolator struck 3 o'clock. But when I pushed the button in the garage and Grandpappy came sliding out in the bathtub, that was going too far. Hello?
This
is one of the bricklayers. Boy, what fun.
Fun? What are you doing?
I'm lying out here by the concrete mixer. We're both getting stiff together.
Gotta get busy and help out, too. Who'll help me with the plastering?
Senorita, I used to be a plasterer. In fact, when I see a calcimine brush, I get that old ceiling.
Pedro, as far as I'm concerned, your ceiling is zero.
Oh, muchas gracias, senorita.
A mess of grass to you, too, Pedro. Right, never mind that now. You just get back to work. Here, you hold that nail, and I'll hit it with the hammer.
Okie dokie, you hit it. Oh, Senorita, you hit your finger with a hammer.
No, I didn't, Pedro. I hit your finger.
You did?
Yes, I did.
Say, Miss Judy, would you like to inspect the work we've done?
Yeah, Eddie, as a matter of fact, I don't like the looks of this house. I think I should have called in some real carpenters.
Oh, do not say that, Senorita. Here, you can climb this ladder and look at the roof. But please be careful. The ladder I make is a little flimsy.
Flimsy? I'll say it is. It's the first time I ever tried to climb a Venetian blind.
To tell you the truth, Miss Judy, I don't like the way that Pedro and Sylvester put up the framework.
I agree with you, Eddie, my boy. Looks awful shaky to me, too. Joe, but maybe it's one of those California rhythm houses.
California rhythm houses?
Yeah. Sway and shake with our next earthquake.
Anyhow, Judy, the boys fixed you a nice cellar to store your canned vegetables and fruit.
Yeah, that's one good consolation. Let's go take a look at it.
All right, come on, Judy. Now, remember, there's no floor. You'll have to walk on these boards laid across the beams.
Well, I'll hold your hand, Mr. Niles.
Oh, okay, but be careful now where you're walking.
Gee, it's dark in here. Pedro, you are not supposed to paint over the windows, too. Whoops! Catch me, Mr. Niles, I'm falling!
And here's Judy with another song, a popular American favorite, Low and Lonely Over You.
Low and lonely, sad and blue, thinking only of little you. Always trying to keep from crying, I'm low and lonely over you. Do you miss me? Say you do. Tell me, darling, please tell me true. Do you yearn, dear, for my return, dear? I'm low and lonely over you.
Saying, oh, if I could only do something fine, something big and important for the war effort. Yes, you'd fly a plane, you'd go into the swampy jungles to care for the sick and wounded. You'd do anything, yes, anything. But you can't. You're tied down with a house and family. But lady, listen, you're the very one who can do something important every day of your life. You can save your used cooking fats. You see, used cooking fats are needed, urgently needed, for making sulfa drugs, vaccines, and other precious life-saving medicines. They're needed, too, for making gunpowder and other war materials. Now, you don't give your waste fats to the war effort. You sell them.
For every pound you turn in, your butcher pays you 4 cents and 2 meat points. So save and sell every ounce of waste cooking fat, even if it's black or burned. Save it. Pour it into tin, not glass, and take it to your butcher the very first thing. The fat you save and sell today may save a soldier's life. Yes, a wounded lad in Italy, a fighting Marine in the Pacific, or an airman in the Aleutians may escape death because you saved your bacon grease. So start today. Thank you.
Well, folks, despite all our trouble in fixing up the motel, we'll see y'all here next week. On account of the shortage of gasoline and the lack of tourists, we're going to make our motel into a combination auto camp and rest home for people that enjoys peace and quiet. So if any of you folks just want a simple spot with simple people, meet all of us here next Tuesday at this very same time. This is simply yours, Judy Canova in Hollywood, saying thanks a lot and good night, soldier, wherever you may be. My heart's lonely without you. Good night, soldier.
Remember, for a breath that's sweet and a smile that dazzles, use Colgate tooth powder. This is Ken Niles saying, see y'all next Tuesday. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Judy Canova Show on Tuned to Yesterday from the 4th of March, 1944 on CBS. Wrapping up this hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday, be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.